Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, greetings from Southern California, ladies and gentlemen, where you're going to see the best acting you'll see all year, today and tonight, as the entire, virtually the entire entertainment community pretends that the Golden Globes mean something. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we are not number one. Speaking of accolades, China became the world's largest trading nation in 2013. You probably didn't even notice that. You were paying attention to other stuff. They overtook the U.S. in what Beijing described as a landmark milestone. Because the Chinese like redundancies and repetition. And saying, but China's annual trade in goods passed the $4 trillion mark for the first time last year, according to official data. If you trust official data. If you date official, trust us. After exports in the world's second largest economy rose 7.9% to $2.21 trillion, and imports rose not going to keep track of that. As a result, total trade rose more than 7% over the year to $4.16 trillion. The U.S. has yet to publish its trade figures for last year, but with trade totaling only $3.5 trillion in the first 11 months, unless it was a really big Christmas season, it's unlikely to beat China. This, according to the Guardian newspaper, the shift in the trading pecking order reflects China's rising global dominance. And I, for one, welcome my new Chinese overlords, despite a slowdown in economic growth there last year. Zheng Yusheng, a rhyming spokesman for China's Customs Administration, said, quote, it's very likely that China overtook the U.S. to become the world's largest trading country in goods in 2013 for the first time. China had already become the world's largest exporter of goods way back in 2009. And a report issued Wednesday on the security of deadly nuclear materials found steady improvement. Seven countries in the last 2 years gave up most of their uranium and plutonium that could readily be turned into weapons. Their actions lowered the number of nations with appreciable fuel for atomic bombs down from 32 to 25. But the nations that made the biggest gains in nuclear security were Belgium. Belgium's got nukes. Canada and Japan. Really? Belgium improved by passing new security legislation, joining a treaty, and decreasing its quantity of nuclear or fissile materials. Canada ratified treaties and issued new regulations on the transport of atomic materials. And, of course, Japan made sweeping nuclear upgrades after the Fuk thing. The United States lost 1 point and is now tied with Britain for 11th place. We fell because we excluded from nuclear safeguards a facility that handles atomic materials. That's very vague of the New York Times to put it that way. Worse, according to the authors of the report, the United States has not ratified two nuclear agreements despite making commitments to do so. This, quote, is particularly negative as other states block efforts to strengthen nuclear security, arguing they'll consider new initiatives only after the United States becomes party to those existing agreements, unquote. But hey, nothing's blown up here lately. The takeaway, of course, we're not number one. Hello, welcome to the show.
You can live your life in a crowded city. You can walk along the crowded street. But the city really ain't no bigger. Friendly people that you meet. You might be a sweet young, pretty. At the dance says you can't keep your seat. But if Dan says don't leave to romance, you might as well be born, with two left feet.
Transcribed and recorded from Southern California, where even the red carpets are green with envy. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. Oh, it's getting so close to Sochi Winter Olympics time, less than a month to go, and Russian officials say a new power grid for the Black Sea Resort has yet to be completed. Workers have built generators and other facilities, but do not expect the grid to come online until later this month, about 2 weeks before the games begin. We're planning to finish all the work by January 20th and to get permission to move the grid into use by January 25, says Energy Minister Alexander Novak. President Putin has toured Sochi to check on progress several times. Organizers say all of the competition venues are ready, but some infrastructure remains unfinished. It's just infrastructure. Don't worry about it. Worry about this. Vladimir Putin promised the Olympics in Sochi would be as green as could be. Instead, the construction of facilities has had disastrous consequences for the environment, particularly for the residents of Baku Street in Sochi, whose homes have become the victims of man-made erosion. This is a report from Der Spiegel. The hillside behind the street is sliding down into the valley below at a pace of nearly 5 feet a year. Residents of Baku Street had long been puzzled by the erosion that was causing their homes to slide or lean. They found a pit where trucks had been dumping rubble waste from the Olympic construction sites. The garbage dump has altered the groundwater flow on the hill, says a member of the group Environmental Watch. That's why the homes are sliding. The worst hit home is a multifamily structure. Over the course of a few months, the five-story building slid down the hill along Baku Street. Before it was torn down, it destroyed the wooden hut of a neighbor. The construction company responsible, like so many in Sochi, had not attained any official permits. When Sochi was awarded the games, the Kremlin pledged, quote, zero waste, meaning no environmental pollution. When the news emerged last October that Russia's state railway had been dumping construction waste from a large project to create a highway and railroad link between Sochi Airport and the Olympic venues, at what authorities have described as an illegal landfill, the International Olympic Committee reacted with outrage. At the same time, it must have been clear that with the magnitude of investments required to prepare for an event this big, the promise of a green games would be very difficult to keep. Environmentalists have little power against a prestigious project of this size. Most environmental organizations have already left Sochi. Local authorities have offered residents of the street in Sochi emergency accommodations. They only include one room for each family. And mastering the winds and currents of Rio de Janeiro's stunning Guanabara Bay is a challenge in itself for Olympic hopefuls getting some practice at this week's Brazil Sailing Cup. Today, the bay's natural beauty conceals a modern hazard. The area is heavily polluted. Sailors have to add evading obstacles, everything from TVs, floating bed frames, and dead animals to their skills. In addition, they must never swallow any water. That's where the sailing competition is going to be held, at the Rio Summer Olympics. 15 cities surround the bay. That means over 8 million residents producing 18,000 liters of sewage per second. Wait till the Olympics gets there. The Olympics, it's a movement, and we all need one. Every day. Meanwhile, the new F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen, foreclosure. From HousingWire.com, RealtyTrack, an organization that collects statistics on the real estate business, has released its U.S. home equity and underwater report for last month, December. It shows that almost 9.5 million U.S. residential properties were deeply underwater. That's about one in five of every property with a mortgage. You liking the recovery so far? Deeply underwater is defined as worth at least 25% less than the combined loans secured by the property. That was down from 10.5 million residential properties deeply underwater in September and from almost 11 million properties in January. There are still millions of homeowners who are in such a deep equity hole that it will take years for them to regain their equity, says the vice president of RealtyTrack. The longer these homeowners remain in a negative equity position without relief in the form of a principal loan balance reduction, the more likely that foreclosure will become the path of least resistance for them. And now,
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Well, it's a new year, and so a new helping of interviewees beginning their answers to questions inexplicably, it seems to me, with the word so, as if they're continuing something that they've just started. The BBC has taken note of this phenomenon, calling it bizarre. And I, for one, can't disagree. So from the BBC itself and from the CBC, here come some fine new examples of what's called the initial so. It's creeping into our language, ladies and gentlemen. Might as well sit back, relax, and enjoy some interviewees beginning their answers with the word so.
What does a Mima Mound look like?
Well, so Mima Mound is really just a small hill.
Wow. And are they concentrated in any particular area of the world?
Well, so they're found actually on every continent except Antarctica.
There are a lot of theories over the years as to what Mima Mounds are. So what tell us some of them?
Well, so one of the first theories to come about, this was in the 1800s actually, was that they were Native American burial mounds.
So this is now what you think is the cause of these things?
Right. Well, so this idea was proposed in the 1940s.
And this is to create what kind of an environment underground for them?
Well, so it's to create a dry environment.
How long would this take to get these Mima Mounds, these 8-foot-high things?
Well, so what my model suggests, and some observations suggest as well, is that they take anywhere from 500 to 700 years.
So you say this theory's been around since the 1940s. How did you test it?
So the problem with trying to figure out how these things form, and this is why it's been such a mystery for so long, is that nobody's actually seen one being created.
You said that these Mima Mounds made by gophers are in every continent except Antarctica.
Right, so that's a really interesting point.
How could people find out? Can you, besides having X-ray vision, can you actually get an idea of what these rodent networks or rodent dwellings would look like inside?
So they've been cut through.
Have you put your theory or your evidence before other scientists and got their response?
Yeah, so the way it works is when you submit a paper to get published, it gets reviewed by experts in the field.
How do you set up a bank?
So you need capital.
What's he doing that they aren't doing, or what's he doing that's better than what they are doing?
So Cosimo, as Robert has said, is extremely astute.
Can you develop that a little more, the Medici support to the arts, and which persons were involved, which objects were involved?
So if we go back to Cosimo, Cosimo the Elder, Pater Patriae, as he's sometimes known as, and his strongest relationships were with artists such as Donatello.
But did it seem, as it seems in television versions of history, a place of the ferment of artists?
So Lorenzo is less responsible for the ferment of artists than he takes advantage of it.
What was that so important to them?
So if we go back to the beginning, the origins of the Medici, we remember that it was as papal bankers.
Do they ever gain as big a foothold again?
So what happens is a whole series of... We go back to the bloodshed, assassinations.
Would you like to develop that, Evelyn, and then finally you, Catherine?
So for me, the great legacy of the Medici is that they made spending money on beautiful things acceptable.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right.
Well, I think that this was our introduction to the well so. We've heard the right so, but now well, which used to start sentences, has to be followed by so before you can actually start talking. Lovely. And now, news from outside the bubble, won't you? This is from the Independent on Sunday newspaper in London, a devastating 250-page dossier detailing allegations of beatings, electrocution, mock executions, and sexual assault has been presented to the International Criminal Court. It could result in some of Britain's leading defense figures facing prosecution for, quote, systematic, unquote, war crimes. The damning dossier draws on cases of more than 400 Iraqis representing, quote, thousands of allegations of mistreatment amounting to war crimes of torture or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. They range from hooding prisoners to burning, electric shocks, threats to kill, and cultural and religious humiliation. Sound familiar? Other forms of alleged abuse include sexual assault, mock executions, threats of rape, death, and torture. The formal complaint is the accumulation of several years' work by public interest lawyers and the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights. It calls for an investigation into the alleged war crimes under Article 15 of the Rome Statute. I guess that's part of the European Union kind of thing. The dossier is the most detailed ever submitted to the ICC's Office of the Prosecutor on war crimes allegedly committed by British forces in Iraq. The court has already acknowledged there was little doubt that war crimes were committed. In 2006, it concluded, quote, there was a reasonable basis to believe that crimes within the jurisdiction of the court had been committed, namely willful killing and inhuman treatment. At that time, prosecutors cited the low number of cases, fewer than 20, as a reason for not mounting an investigation. But since then, hundreds of other claims have come to light, prompting consideration of the complaint now. It's the start of a process which could result in British politicians and generals being put in the dock on war crimes charges. The sheer scale and seriousness of the allegations passes the gravity threshold to justify an investigation, according to the complaint. It continues, those who bear the greatest responsibility for alleged war crimes, quote, include individuals at the highest levels, unquote, of the British Army and political system. It argues that the pattern of abusive treatment by UK services personnel in Iraq continued over almost 6 years of military operations. Only a handful of courts martial relating to the conduct of British forces in Iraq have been held to date. The complaint presents evidence of the systematic use of brutal violence that at times resulted in the death of detainees while in the custody of British services personnel, and it claims there is evidence of brutality combined with cruelty and forms of sadism, including sexual abuse and sexual and religious humiliation. The ICC, the International Criminal Court, is under mounting pressure to demonstrate a willingness to act against war crimes committed by Western countries and not solely focus on African nations. Not a word about the United States. I guess we're scot-free. News from outside the bubble. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Sorry.
Former basketball star Dennis Rodman apologized this week for comments he made suggesting that an American detained in North Korea had deserved his fate. His excuse? He'd been drinking when he made the remarks to CNN. Well, aren't the people at CNN drinking too? It sure looks like. Rodman has come under sharp criticism during his current visit to North Korea because of the positive comments he's made about its leader, Kim Jong-un. while largely ignoring the country's human rights record. The criticism intensified when Rodman discussed North Korea's detention of Kenneth Bay, an American missionary, in a CNN interview. "If you understood what Kenneth Bay did," Rodman said, "do you understand what he did in this country, why he's held captive in this country?" On Thursday, Rodman expressed regret for those remarks, saying in an email sent to the Associated Press through his publicist, quote, "I take full responsibility for my actions." Yeah, that sounds like Dennis. "It had been a very stressful day. Some of my teammates were leaving because of pressure from their families and business associates. My dreams of basketball diplomacy was quickly falling apart." That does sound like Dennis. "I had been drinking. It's not an excuse, but by the time the interview happened, I was upset. I want to first apologize to Kenneth Bay's family. I want to apologize to my teammates and my management team. I embarrassed a lot of people. I'm very sorry. At this point, I should know better than to make political statements. I'm truly sorry." Till he drinks it. Target stores revised the number of customers whose personal information was stolen in a widespread data breach during the holiday season. It now reports a range of 70 to 110 million people. That's about a third of all American adults at the low end, nearly three times as great as the company's original estimate at the high end. The theft is one of the largest ever of retail data. It also includes customers who may not even have shopped at Target during the holiday season. The company apologized on Friday for the broadening violation of its customers' privacy. Quote, "I know it is frustrating for our guests to learn that this information was taken, and we're truly sorry they're having to endure this," said Greg W. Steinhafel, Target's chief executive. We're his guests. We're not his customers. Deadline Berlin. Google apologized this week after a Berlin intersection briefly regained its Nazi-era name, Adolf Hitlerplatz, on the Google Maps service. Google spokeswoman Lena Wagner said the company, or Wagner, I guess it should be, said the company quickly took down the name after the error was discovered. The intersection was relabeled with its proper name, Theodor Heusplatz, after West Germany's first post-World War II president. In a statement, Google said edits submitted by users of its MapMaker function are reviewed either by the company of mapping volunteers or Google moderators. In this particular case, they continued, the change in the street name was mistakenly approved. We fixed it as soon as we were made aware. Isn't Google aware of everything all the time? In real time? Apparently not. Quote, "We apologize for any offense caused." The intersection in West Berlin sits on what the Nazis envisioned as the capital's main east-west axis for a redesign of the city that was never completed. Snapchat, which makes an application for sending annotated photos that disappear after 24 hours, apologized for a December 31 data breach. After facing criticism, Snapchat released an update that lets users opt out of a feature that had a vulnerability which caused data such as phone numbers of 4.6 million users to be exposed last year. Snapchat has become popular among teenagers. It's been warned about the risk by researchers before the breach occurred. And they've since faced mounting criticism in the media, including calls for chief executive Evan Spiegel to step down or to start a catalog. Quote, "We're sorry for any problems this issue may have caused you, and we really appreciate your patience and support," said the company on its blog. Snapchat uses a blog. Isn't that retro? Deadline Tokyo, a Japanese academic society, has apologized for the front cover of their journal, which used a drawing of a cleaning woman with a cable in her back to depict the notion of artificial intelligence. The Japanese Society for Artificial Intelligence was hoping to make artificial intelligence more appealing to potential readers with a cover illustration on the first edition of the new year. They rejected the dense tracts of text and complicated diagrams that have adorned the front of the journal for the last few decades. In came an attractive doe-eyed young woman holding a sweeping brush and with a fake cable plugged into her back. The JSAI admitted that its attempt to popularize its small circulation magazine may have misfired and apologized for any offense it had caused. "The front cover design is not intended to discriminate against women," the group said. "The design gave room for the interpretation that women should clean. We deeply regret that this matter was not considered more carefully." The group noted, however, that artificial intelligence is not an easy thing to depict as it has no physical form. That doesn't stop every religion on the planet. Airlines and airports are still dealing with the aftermath of last week's snowstorm. JetBlue apologized but defended its decision to shut down operations at four Northeast airports for 17 hours on Monday and Tuesday. And the Greater Toronto Airport Authority is apologizing for shutting down to arriving flights on Tuesday. CEO Howard Eng apologized for the shutdown. I think we dropped the ball, and we'll fix it. Nice mixed metaphor, sir. Fix the ball. You go do that. Deadline Washington, the U.S. Navy. The Navy has apologized for mistakenly sending Washington television reporter Scott McFarlane an internal email that plotted ways to dodge the reporter's Freedom of Information Act requests for documents related to a mass shooting last September. McFarlane, who is a reporter for NBC, requested memos drafted by Naval Sea Systems Command officials shortly after the shooting, along with photos of the building. In an email intended for internal distribution, Robin Patterson, the Navy's Freedom of Information Act public liaison, outlined strategies to thwart his requests, which she called another fishing expedition. Recommend that you provide the requester with an estimate, as I can see the search and review. Possible reductions will be very costly, she wrote in the email. This may encourage the requester to narrow the scope. Just because they're media doesn't mean the memos would shed light on specific government activities. McFarlane posted a screenshot of the email, calling the Navy's blunder on Twitter an epic failure. Navy Administrator Steve Muck apologized in an email. The Navy also apologized via Twitter, affirming its commitment to the Freedom of Information Act and its vital role in providing transparency to the American public. In his farewell address to the General Assembly, outgoing Virginia Republican Governor Bob McDonnell apologized this week for a gift scandal that diminished his political standing while trying to highlight what he called a strong record of achievements. He asserted that he broke no laws but conceded his actions left an adverse public impression, according to his prepared comments. He's currently under federal and state investigation for accepting thousands of dollars worth of gifts from a former CEO of a dietary supplement maker. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram's executive editor has apologized to readers for a story it published last November about the trouble people were having getting affordable insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Jim Witt said the reporter and editor of the story did not do their due diligence to discover the background of the people profiled in the story, some of whom turned out to have Tea Party connections and who were actually able to obtain more affordable coverage through Obamacare. Knowing the background of the person quoted could give readers important clues about someone's motives, he wrote, but you didn't learn that from reading our story because we neglected to investigate the background of the people we quoted. That's something you learn to do in Journalism 101, he wrote. I remember my old professor saying, quote, if your mother says she loves you, check it out, unquote. That'd be good advice for most of the people covering Washington today, wouldn't it? Kim Basinger has apologized for making a number of, quote, bad comedies, unquote, during her acting career. The actress has garnered critical acclaim in dramas, but she's also tried her hand at comedies, admits she's had less success with her funny films. In an interview with a British newspaper, she admits, quote, I know what it takes to put a film together, but I can't help produce some really bad comedy sometimes. I'm sorry. Deadline Washington, House aides say a Florida congressman who pleaded guilty to cocaine possession has apologized to his Republican colleagues for not sharing. The aides say Representative Trey Raydell was emotional as he spoke briefly during a closed-door meeting of House Republicans. They said he thanked lawmakers who reached out to him, said he was in a good place. How's his journey going, though? And had found a good support group. One aide said the lawmakers responded with moderate applause. The 37-year-old Raydell is a Tea Party-backed freshman who pleaded guilty in November to cocaine possession and was sentenced to a year on probation, like, you know, folks on the street do when they get found guilty of cocaine possession. The House Ethics Committee says it will investigate his actions. Raydell says he will not resign. Another politician apologizing but saying he did nothing wrong, District of Columbia Mayor Vincent Gray, apologizing for misconduct that occurred during his 2010 campaign, reiterating he didn't do anything wrong and didn't know others were breaking the law. He wanted to apologize because, quote, it was the Vincent Gray campaign. It was hastily put together, he said, and conduct occurred that was painful and embarrassing. Sound like someone else who was in the news this week apologizing?
I have come out here to this office where I've been many times before. And I come out here today to apologize to the people of New Jersey. I apologize to the people of Fort Lee, and I apologize to the members of the state legislature. I am embarrassed and humiliated by the conduct of some of the people on my team.
That's New Jersey Governor Chris Christie in about 25 seconds worth of a nearly two-hour press conference in which he apologized and took about a million questions on the subject of the closure of three lanes of the George Washington Bridge at the on-ramp in Fort Lee, New Jersey, reputedly, according to emails that have become public, after an aide to Christie took offense at the fact that the mayor of Fort Lee had refused to endorse Chris Christie's reelection and devised the lane closure and the resultant traffic jams as political retaliation. But the lane closures were explained in publicity at the time as being due to a traffic study. And then later in the week, Governor Christie went in person to Fort Lee to apologize to the mayor. Christie said he had a very good, productive meeting, and the mayor accepted his apology. Christie says his administration has to work to regain the trust of the residents of Fort Lee. Meanwhile, he's entertaining all of the rest of us. It's not nice.
What do you mean you're not on our team?
It's not right.
I never said I'd endorse him.
It's not fair.
No. But I said you would. What do you think, Chris?
I think it's time our friend here got his traffic studied.
Revenge is a dish best served on the streets. Traffic study, where payback takes it slow. Real slow.
We've got a hospital to run here, and the ambulances can't get through.
Gee, you should have thought about that before you made my staff overreact.
Not me, man. I didn't kill that tax cut.
If I were you, I'd start walking.
For my health?
No. It's the only way you'll get anywhere.
When the going gets tough, the studies get going. Sylvester Stallone is Chris Christie.
Happy idling, baby.
From the executive sound editor of Karma is a Bitch comes a strange new world where all the lights are red. Traffic study. Only in theaters and surrounding neighborhoods.
Sometimes a study takes forever.
Traffic study. Getting there is none of the fun. Coming soon. Slowly.
Well, I've been saving for a custom van.
Southern California, this is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, News of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Happy New Year to our friend Addy, the Atom.
Happy New Year to you. I have no years.
Just continual spinning, right?
Just that.
Boy, you sound down. Been drinking?
No.
You know that TEPCO, the Japanese electric utility responsible for the Fuk disaster and the cleanup so far, has announced it's changing its name?
Yeah. I think I might change my name, too.
Really?
Nuki.
Nuki?
I don't know
about that. We'll think about that. Dateline, Japan, a fish contaminated with extremely high levels of radiation, was found in waters near the crippled Fuk No. 1 plant, according to a government-affiliated research institute.
Yeah, government-affiliated.
Oh, boy, you are bitter and down today. The fisheries research agency said the black sea bream had 12,400 becquerels per kilogram of radioactive cesium. That's 124 times the safety standards for foods. The fish was caught at the mouth of the Nidagawa River in Fukushima Prefecture. In November, the site is 37 kilometers south of the power plant. It was one of 37 fish, all black sea bream, the researchers caught in waters in and off Iwaki during the fall to study the level of radiation to which they were exposed. The research institute said it will study the fish further to try and determine when it became contaminated with such high levels of radioactive cesium.
Probably ate a wristwatch.
You think? Two other fish also exceeded the safety standards of 100 becquerels per kilogram. The readings of the remaining 34 fish were within the safety limits.
So eat those.
Wow. All right. You have a bream. Dateline Pittsburgh. A frigid Arctic air mass that brought record low temperatures to Pennsylvania, closing schools, courts, and even some ski slopes, is being investigated as the possible cause of a nuclear reactor shutdown.
Water's too hot, they shut them down. Place is too cold, they shut them down. What's the deal?
Interesting you would ask that. The dense mass of ultra-cold air began moving into the state on Monday afternoon, which is one of two reactors shut down at First Energy Corporation's Beaver Valley Nuclear Power Station, about 25 miles northwest of Pittsburgh. There are many potential reasons this could happen, and the cold weather is one of them, said First Energy spokeswoman. Western Pennsylvania temperatures were in the mid-20s Monday before dipping precipitously afternoon to minus 7. The reactor shut down about 5 p.m. when the temperatures had fallen to about zero. The NRC called it an uneventful and safe shutdown, but noted that a fire suppression system was activated, dousing an electrical transformer with water, and given the temperature, the transformer remained frozen for days. That failure prompted the reactor to shut down.
It's a chain reaction. What do you want? It's a chain reaction. That's what it's for.
And Dateline Sendai, Japan, the most ambitious radiation cleanup ever attempted, is running behind schedule. The attempt is to clean up Fuk, of course, is being dogged by both a lack of oversight and a shortage of workers, according to a Reuters analysis of contracts and interviews with dozens of those involved. Three times last year, Japanese gangsters were arrested on charges of infiltrating a construction giant Obayashi Corporation's network of decontamination subcontractors and illegally sending workers to the government-funded project. In the October case, homeless men were rounded up at a train station, then put to work cleaning radioactive soil and debris in Fuk City for less than the minimum wage.
Homeless men are motivated workers.
I guess they are. Will you cheer up before I see you again? And I assume you will. Clean, cheap, safe, too clean, too depressed to meter, our friend the Atom. Ladies and gentlemen, probably a thank you note has been received in the office of Governor Chris Christie, because no one was happier when Chris Christie took over the news with that almost 2-hour press conference this week, and dominated the news cycles thereafter. No one was happier, I say, than President Obama, because the week started with the publication of excerpts of a book by former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, a book very critical of the president under whom he served. Gates, of course, is a Republican. The president kept him. He was a holdover from the Bush administration because he was being so darn bipartisan. And as a matter of fact, the current defense secretary, Chuck Hagel, is also a Republican. In the book, excerpts that have been released so far, Gates says he had doubts about Obama's commitment to the war in Afghanistan. Said he just wanted to get out. And he views that as a bad thing. But he has critical things to say about Obama's decision-making and about the desire of the White House to centralize decision-making, as well as the tendency of Obama and his advisors to disrespect high-ranking military officials. Gates had had a reputation for equanimity and discretion and sort of holding his cards very close to his vest regarding his personal opinions before he got a book deal. With three more years of the Obama administration to go, that's got to be some cause for concern in La Casablanca.
Father knows best.
Well, I have to say, Mr. President, I haven't seen the Roosevelt dining room this empty since Dick Cheney had his going away party.
Yeah, Mr. Secretary, the nest is feeling a little empty right about now. Some nights it's just me and Manuel. Isn't that right, Manuel? Manuel?
Oh, sorry, sir. I was filtering the muscle liquid.
Oh. Well, rattling around this room all by myself makes me feel even older than looking at all these gray hairs in the mirror.
Well, sir, there aren't any mirrors in here.
Not anymore.
Well, I imagine your wife should be back from vacation soon.
Oh, sure. She's just taking a few opportunities to fundraise on the way back. Mm. Got to make sure the library gets built.
Well, of course, without libraries, communities lose the inspiration of...
My library.
Well, that's good, too. And your girls, my gosh, they're growing up so fast. I guess they've got lives of their own now.
Oh, yeah. Kitten's at a sleepover. Mm-hmm. And Princess is auditioning for her own show on MSNBC.
Well, I'm glad I could arrange to delay my Middle East trip to have this dinner with you.
Oh, me too, John. After all, I would hate to have to find out how you're doing or what you're thinking by... reading about it in a book.
Well, I wouldn't worry about that, my friend. Once you get that library, you'll have your choice of plenty of books.
It's not that kind of library. But, John, if there was something on your mind, if something was bothering you about me or about what you thought I thought, you'd tell me, wouldn't you?
Well, of course. I mean, within reason.
Another spring roll, sir?
No thanks, Manuel.
Geez, quiet.
Yeah. So, if you thought, just pursuing this thought a little further into the main course, mm-hmm. if you thought that I disagreed with you about how we're dealing with a challenge, you wouldn't be holding that in.
No, I think at this point I have enough of your respect to be able to tell you when I don't agree with you without fearing the loss, let's say, of foie gras dinners.
Hey, once I'm back in Chicago, this is a no-no.
I think once Michelle's back here, it's a no-no.
But you know, John, it's like I tell Princess. Keeping these things bottled up is bad for your health, so...
Well, so maybe before the dessert course?
Of course.
Well, I can just express a couple of very, very minor misgivings.
Sure.
Things that may even be too small to mention, but...
No, nothing's too small to mention. Not even Sarah Palin's brain.
Well, okay. Obviously, our friend Mr. Karzai is a prickly fellow, mm-hmm. but I do think some of the statements from your office have exacerbated the tension between us.
Uh-huh. I hear that.
And I worry that we may have miscalibrated our statements regarding Syria vis-a-vis our actions on the Syrian matter.
I hear that.
And I'm concerned that our colleague, Mr. Hagel, is being allowed to just sit in the weeds on a lot of these issues rather than weighing in.
I hear you.
Any reaction to what I've just told you?
Hmm? Oh, sorry, I wasn't listening. Right. Actually, John, I do have one question.
Sure.
You think Hagel's so quiet because he's working on a book?
I was...
Hey, Dad. Hi, Mr. John.
Oh, hello, sweetie.
Hi, Princess. You don't look too triumphant. Self-esteem, take a hit.
Well, the audition was a flop.
No.
They told me they were going with Anthony Weiner's estranged wife.
Well, she's probably got better social media skills.
Yeah.
But you know, Princess, every setback just makes you try a little harder next time.
I know. Well, I guess I better go crack a book.
Mm.
Night, Mr. John.
Good night. Oh, they grow up so fast.
Yeah. I just hope she's reading a book and not writing one. I want to thank the folks at BBC Radio 2 for inviting me to take a little walk through my vinyl record collection on a special program called Vinyl Tap last week. But now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
News of inspectors general.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one who pipes up a lot to no real effect. The Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. There's an optimistic name, if ever there was one. Since a multi-million-dollar corruption scandal nearly toppled Afghanistan's largest bank 4 years ago, the country's banking regulatory agency has stonewalled American attempts at oversight or intervention, raising fears that a graft-ridden financial sector could bubble the country's development. Hobble the country's development. We wouldn't want that. The graft-ridden financial sector is bubbling ours, but could hobble that country's. The Special Inspector General, the U.S. government's watchdog for Afghanistan projects, sounded a note of alarm in a report issued this week about Da Afghanistan Bank. I know it sounds hip-hop. It's not. Da Afghanistan Bank, the Afghan government's financial regulatory agency, Confidence in the Financial Supervision Department was shaken after widespread fraud led to a run on Kabul Bank, requiring an $800 million bailout from the Afghan government. Where'd they get that money? The disaster became emblematic of Afghan corruption, says the report, especially after it came to light that President Karzai and his top aides were dictating to prosecutors who should and should not be charged for their part in the fraud, unlike, let's say, Eric Holder. Karzai's brother, Mahmoud, was named by the Washington Post as one of the power players who allegedly got payoffs from the bank in form of loans they were never asked to repay. He was never charged with any crime, unlike, say, the American bank. I'll stop doing that now. After Kabul Bank's collapse, audits of Afghan banks found that few of them had established policies and procedures. There was a general lack of accounting expertise, and many weren't following international accounting standards. But instead of encouraging the American military and State Department to help fix the banking sector, the president, Karzai, decided the U.S. government advisors were no longer welcome at DAB. Afghan politicians also publicly criticized American technical assistance. Treasury officials told the Special Inspector General that Afghans at DAB said U.S. advisors had caused the Kabul bank crisis. When the DAB governor asked whether the Treasury Department might resume aid, Treasury officials gave the regulatory agency an ultimatum that, among other things, demanded the Afghan government stop blaming the U.S. for the bank's collapse. The regulatory governor did not pursue the matter further. The Special Inspector General says he has no recommendations for the American government, since he currently has no control or influence over the Afghanistan bank regulator. It all sounds so good, doesn't it? News of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USN 440 cable system in Japan up around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave, and the mighty 104 in Berlin. Think of it. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. On your smartphone through stitcher.com, and a free podcast is waiting for you at wwno.org, Sideshow Network, SoundCloud, or iTunes. And it'd be just like Chris Christie apologizing for a couple more hours if you'd agree to join with me then. Well, you already, thank you very much, A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Get better soon. The email address for this program and a playlist of the music heard here on, always available at harryshearer.com, where you can now get, for the first time, Karzai Talk t-shirts. I said Karzai Talk t-shirts. For someone you want to govern. Check it out at the store at harryshearer.com. And you'll also find the music, the playlist of the music heard here on the show. Did I tell you that? I'm sure I did. I'll see you. I won't see you. I'll be yakking at you 140 characters at a time, at The Harry Shearer on Twitter. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWO, thanks to Jenny Lawson, too, at WWNO. Through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from Southern California.